I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody, this is Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio 111 Productions, episode one, season two, Sadie Sadie.
Can you believe it?
I know.
Season two.
We're kicking off season two. I'm all excited. What an episode. Wow. Richard getting into Dean's grill and owning him. Wow. It was, my God. But do you get it? Do you understand? I understood him. Okay, Riley, superstar, newly minted superstar of the ball club. It is time to give your synopsis of this episode. Go.
This is season two, episode one, Sadie Sadie, air date October 9, 2001. Lorelai accepts Mac's proposal, but when Emily hears about the upcoming wedding from Suki, she is hurt and angry that Lorelai did not bother to tell her. Meanwhile, Rory brings Dean to dinner at her grandparents' house.
What a way to start out the second season.
Do they kind of do that? So like premieres and finales are like guns blazing, like we got to come out with our best stuff.
Well, they've had the whole hiatus to come up with the first episode or, you know, refine the arc. Danielle, yo, Romo, what's up?
I'm not on my yacht today.
You're not on the, no, the yacht is moored somewhere. Is it docked somewhere? All right. And you know, it wasn't so complex and interwoven. It was like they really took their, you know, their set pieces, yes. And there were a couple of them, and there was just mm-hmm. enough going on, but it was really great, compact. And it, you know, I don't mind the intricate storylines and all the interwoven stuff. That's great. But this was just like so much fun to watch. This
one, yeah, it was really you and Lorelai and sort of the town and that. And then obviously Richard versus Dean. Which was cool. And then sort of the B storyline seemed to be like Lane and her parents sending her off.
Yeah, that was good. That was funny. You know, with that huge suitcase. That was pretty funny. That was actually pretty funny. Yeah. That poor kid. She's getting shipped off to South Korea. But I mean, look, it's a chance to travel. You're a teenager. You're going to a foreign country. For God's sake, embrace it.
Yeah, I think she just was worried if she's ever coming back.
No, I understand. Of course she's coming back. Her mother's not going to ship her off. She'll miss her too much.
Okay, so should we start with you and Lorelai, or should we start with Richard and Dean?
Let's start with me and Lorelai. Because that scene, see, it's from my perspective, and I've never seen it before, and now I remember shooting it, and I didn't realize it was just such a great setup for that scene. I mean, they really set us up so well for that scene with the townspeople following behind Lorelai and Rory. I mean, what an hysterical image. And the Bootsy thing, when Bootsy interrupted her when she first picked up the bridal magazine.
Yes,
and
you know what, that made me sad because, you know, he died recently.
Yes, he did pass away.
Sad.
He did pass
and he was
away,
so
unfortunately.
Good on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, he was great. Like he was a great hang. He was just such a great actor and such a great guy. You know, he was a dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker. I think he's from Hell's Kitchen or someplace, but he just a great guy. He didn't do a lot of episodes, but whenever he was there, it was just a ton of fun. A real guy, you know, a guy's guy.
Yeah, Brian Tarantino.
Yeah, terrific guy. Rest in peace, buddy. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
It was bittersweet to see him on the episode because he's gone.
But he's such a great part.
Oh, fantastic!
And it reminded me that he does recur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a lot, but he's in. Yeah. He's in. He's in the family. And
did anyone like I did zoom in to try and see who was on the cover of that InStyle wedding?
No, I didn't do that. Did you ladies?
Did
do
I
that?
Reveal it?
Who's on the cover?
So I'm pretty sure it was Courtney Thorne Smith from Melrose Place.
Oh, sure, I remember her.
But someone will correct me. But I thought it was interesting because they used all those real magazines.
So the ramp up to that scene, really set us up for greatness. Really did.
Miss Patty, mm-hmm. really, it's, and now the town isn't even hiding that they know, you know, mm-hmm. and Rory isn't hiding it. So Miss Patty says, like, have you told Luke? Mm-hmm. Be gentle. So it's like, they're really like, y'all like each other. And then Rory says, like, the whole town knows he's got a thing for you. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, but she can't deny it at this point. They've been in, you know, delicate situations together where she knows he's about to ask her out. Yep. She's
still trying with it. We're just friends.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Exactly. Well, you know, I can't blame her. You know, you can't. It's a small town. You gotta, you know, you don't want to, you know what, where you eat, if you know what I mean.
It was almost like Luke had been prepping for that moment because he was ready. Like, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be supportive. And I'm about to prove to you that this is not the right thing.
It was, I say, a masterstroke in psychology. I mean, it was just, what a move. And it's the first time I realized that, I mean, it really made Luke and Lorelai legit. I mean, they really legitimized that narrative right there with that scene. Yes. I mean, it was like, if you had any doubts that this is going to be a theme throughout the entirety of the series, here it is. Look at this scene. Then, boy, everybody's anticipating Luke's reaction to this. And yeah. More to the point, how she's going to tell him. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man, wow, what a great
scene.
It
was perfect.
It was perfect.
Because he nailed it.
Yeah. But even better and smarter, that great little scene between Lorelai and Rory before she went up. You're going to tell him? You're going to go up and tell him? No, I'm not going to tell him. You know, all that little patter back and forth. I mean, just yes. I mean, even teed it up even higher, you know, ramped up the tension even more. It was beautiful.
We'll get into the detail of that scene, but the choreography required for the scene where Rory and Lorelai are walking and talking and the entire town starts to walk behind them. And then the moment they turn around, the entire town turns around and looks like they're very busy talking. I mean, it was like, that could not have been easy to shoot. With, I mean, oh my God.
No, I mean, they're all, you know, it's all a self-contained set and they lock it down and, you know, they just get it done.
It was so perfect. And yeah. With the flowers everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the yellow flowers everywhere.
Now I remember shooting that scene and enjoying that scene so much to do because he was... In a rare occasion, not uptight and not irritated, and he was cool as a cucumber, and you saw a different side of Luke who was just like kind of playing a role there to get under her skin a little bit because he knew that was his only chance, right? Is that how you saw it? Is that how you girls saw it? You saw Luke
a million percent
flipping the psychology because that's the only chance he has?
Riley, Danielle, is that how you guys felt? Because that's what I thought. I mean, I thought he is handling this so beautifully. Mm-hmm. He cares. He's trying to be kind. He's like, oh, that's great. And then he's just like, boom, 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 without being like an ass. Mm-hmm. Sorry, can you say ass? Bleep? Ass bleep.
I wrote a note down when I was watching it, and I said, Luke is being so cool in caps. Like, just all caps. Yeah. Like, you were so cool. Yeah. Like, calm, cool, collected during that whole thing.
Which is what you had to do.
Had to do it.
For her to go, I don't know the answer to any of these questions.
Yeah. I put the doubt in her mind. But I kind of pushed her into saying yes. Maybe a little bit of a premature yes. I kind of feel like something's going to happen. I kind of know. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I know that's not happening. And I'm really intrigued to find out how it all dissolves. You know, I'm sure it's going to be really fun to watch. But that was really fun to watch, well, and I'm so glad. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's one of the rare times that I've ever seen. And I know a lot of people don't care about this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. It's one of the few times I've ever kind of enjoyed watching myself in a scene.
I get it. I would too, because it was,
because it was like, you know, I was in command and it was just like, I wasn't reactive and I was just like kind of pushing the narrative there. And she was the one that was flummoxed. And isn't she wonderful as the flummoxed person? I mean, just had no idea what was going on. And it was just the great reads on her face. It was just fantastic. I love that scene.
The scene is so perfect. And even Rory, when she's like, okay, like, you better tell him, oh, can you get me a muffin while you're up there? Wait, okay. We have a little surprise for you.
Oh, good. Wow. I like after surprises.
The break. So you need to like, we need to go to commercial.
And then, okay. All back, right. All right.
Get ready.
Oh my God. I love surprises. All right, everybody. We're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, there's going to be some surprises. I love surprises. All right, kiddos. We'll be back after these messages. All right, everybody, we're back. Scott Patterson, I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio 111 Productions, and we've got a surprise. The girls have cooked something up. They're springing it on me. I have no idea what's going on. What is this? There's a script? Scene reenactment? What's going on here?
Okay, so because we also felt that this scene was crucial, we don't want anyone to have any, you know, memory lapses where they don't remember the scene exactly. So here are Luke and Lorelai to reenact this scene, starring Riley and Danielle.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Starring Riley and Danielle, I'm not in the scene?
No, you're just going to have to sit back and enjoy.
Oh, gosh darn. That's awesome. I love this. All right, everybody. Everybody settle down. Everybody settle. Are we ready over there? All right. Everybody good? Settle, please. And acting.
Okay, God, fine. Hey.
Fresh coffee will be ready in a minute, unless you want to roll up a dollar bill and go nuts.
No, thanks. I can wait.
What the hell's going on with them?
Oh, I don't know.
Crazy people. Whole town should be medicated and put in a rec room with ping pong tables and hand puppets. What?
Nothing. I have something to tell you. No, I have something to share with you, actually.
To share with me?
Yes, because when exciting things happen in your life, you want to share them with the people in your life you think you find them exciting, which I think you will.
What is it?
Well, it's very...
Exciting? I've heard. I'm all prepared to jump up and down if necessary.
Okay, here it is. Max has asked me to marry him.
Yeah, I figured.
You did?
Well, it was obvious. You know, you two were getting kind of close. He was around a lot. Then last night with that life-changing thing comment, you know, I put two and two together and figured it out.
Oh.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
You set a date?
No, I haven't answered him yet.
You're gonna say yes.
How do you know?
Well, you're making a big deal about telling me he proposed.
I don't think I'm making a big deal.
And you wouldn't do that if you weren't gonna say yes?
Okay, I'm sharing something with you. Sharing is not making a big deal. Sharing is a nice gesture. Like when you're a kid and you have one of those popsicles and you break into two and the other half of the other kid. That is sharing. That is what I'm doing.
You offered me half a popsicle?
Yes. Okay, so now you know.
Now I know.
I guess I'll just have two blueberry muffins and some coffee.
Coming right up.
Okay.
You know, I think it's good you're doing this.
You do? Good, me too. I mean, not... Not that I'm definitely doing it, but if I do, then it'll be good.
Acting's hard.
It's so
hard. Where are you gonna live?
What?
Here, Hartford?
Here, I don't know. We haven't talked about it, actually.
Hartford's probably good.
It's
closer to Rory's school.
It's so hard.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Of course. It's a little far from the inn.
Yeah.
But who knows how long you'll work after you're married.
Excuse me?
Oh, but you probably already talked about that, right?
No, but I do think he and my father have to come to an agreement how many goats I'm worth.
Hey, I'm just talking here. It's great, really. You gonna have more kids?
Hi, personal.
I mean, he wants kids, right?
In the world, yes, he wants kids.
You haven't talked about that either.
Okay, you know what we have to not discuss is none of your business.
Join checking accounts?
Luke.
You don't know his last name, don't you?
I want my popsicle back.
Fine, it's your business.
Yes, it is. It's my business.
Hey, some people go their entire lives without having these kinds of conversations. My parents didn't discuss a damn thing my entire childhood. Worked fine for them. Of course, when my mom died, she had to tell my dad where the coupon drawer was. Took him 10 years to find it. Used a coffee can the whole time.
Okay.
I don't care what anyone says. A coupon can is not as good as a coupon drawer.
How are those muffins coming?
But you know what? You might like a coupon can. You never know. Here you go. Two blueberry muffins.
Thank you.
And congratulations again. Oh. That is
and
hard.
Scene.
Tongue twister.
Wow.
I don't know how you guys did it.
Wow.
I seriously don't. I know you're professionals, but that is hard.
Acting's hard.
So hard.
Do you say coupon weird?
She said coupon.
It's coupon, isn't it?
Coupon.
You can say coupon. You can say coupon. I've never heard it said that way, but she said it. It didn't sound off. Coupon.
It sounded weird to me. Like,
coupon. It sounded more cultured.
You guys, my entire life, I've said coupon.
This is a debate that will rage.
Potato, potato. Same thing.
Throughout eternity.
So, Scott, what do you think of their performance?
I mean, I think it's a good first shot at it, But let's, you know, look, acting is really hard. You can't just pick it up and do it, right? It's it requires years and years and years.
A scene that was on television that was spectacular. And they made it what I would call mediocre at best.
You can try. You can try. You want to try it?
No. I'll act next week.
Yes.
But I do love that scene.
Yeah. I thought you both acquitted yourself. You represented yourselves and your families with honor.
They also like messed up some major words where like the word was I do and they said I don't, which like destroyed the whole meaning of everything. But it's all right.
They can't take that one away from you guys. You said yes and you did it. At least you said yes. At least you tried. You know, there's a scene in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest where Jack Nicholson could not pick up that sink. And they all laughed at him.
Oh, really?
He couldn't. You know, he said, I'm going to pick that thing up and I'm going to break out of here and throw it through the window and break out of here and get the heck out of here. And he couldn't do it. And they all mocked him. And he said, yeah, but at least I tried. God damn it. At least I did that. Right? And you guys are both little Jack Nicholsons. Good for you.
You know, Scott, this is the pep talk I needed today. Thank you. I appreciate you.
I like being compared to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. For the two people still listening after that acting.
It wasn't. It was you guys, you know, come on. That acting's hard. It's hard. It's so hard. Oh, my
it
God.
Is, but that is a great scene.
Yeah.
Just not the way they did it.
Right.
But a great scene.
Right.
Well done, sir.
Right. That's like, you know, putting, that's like putting a 7-year-old in a race car and say, go to the Indy 500. You know what I mean?
How many takes would you do on a scene like that?
I don't know. You do a master shot and you do it until you nail it. And then you do move in for the coverage. And then, you know, you do her side, then you do my side. So you end up doing it, you know, at least 20, 30, 40 times.
And yeah. And on a scene like that, do you have to nail it? Like for that master shot,
word for word, to finish. Oh, yes, you do.
Start to finish. So if somebody messes up in the middle, it's...
No, the editor needs every piece of that master shot. The master shot to the audience is the wider shot, right? They do a wide shot, a big profile shot. And they do a couple... I think they do a couple different angles on the master. You got to nail it perfectly on the master before they even punch in and get the closer versions.
And did everybody always do, this is like a real industry thing, but I've heard people talk about it. Did all of you do your own coverage? Meaning if Lauren's doing a scene and it's her coverage, you stayed and did your part with
God, her? Yes.
Because I think on some shows I've heard like some people don't, which is sort of, is that kind of like considered a jerk move? If you don't stay with your...
Yeah, it's like, pretty jerky. Partner. It is. Yeah. You need to support... I mean, because also the editor needs it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to hear dialogue. And you know what? The performance has to be as good, if not better, off camera as you just did it on camera. So I really tried to give better and more off camera because it's as important. You know, just because you're not... it's kind of, and if somebody's feeling sick or they're just exhausted and you want to give them a break and the editor okays it and the director okays it, then you say, no worries. And then, you know, Lauren's stand-in would maybe once in a while, it didn't happen very often. I mean, Lauren was a trooper, you know, she hung in there.
And then what about all the backgrounds? So like
same
Rory, you know, Alexis is in the background and everybody has to nail their parts.
Even the extras in the background, they got to nail it exactly how they did it at very specific points in the scene. It's all got to match,
right? And all the town people,
everything's got to match. And there's a person on set who keeps, you know, the script supervisor takes care of all that stuff, and it's a really hard job because we had to reshoot scenes sometimes where it was kind of impossible to get everything down. But the script supervisor, or when they're watching it in the rushes and the dailies, they'll say, oh, that didn't match. And that guy walked across and that's going to look awkward because now there's an empty space. And when we punch in and he's not there, and it's like, oh, that's really distracting. So if it's distracting and it takes you out of the reality of what they're trying to create, yeah, you got to shoot it again. Because it's important. It's everything. You know, you can't, you know, you're trying to suspend people's disbelief. And if they're shocked out of it, you're done. They'll turn the channel. Yeah. Yeah, they won't trust you. So it's really, really important. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And it seems, I mean, very rarely do I get taken out of my mindset when I'm watching
Right.
Gilmore Girls.
Right.
I'm completely honed in on
Right.
you two, even though I know they're, you know, the background is happening and you feel like you're in the diner.
Right. That's because everybody knows what they were doing when they said this line or that line or that line. Did I, you know, did I turn on the muffins? Like a lot of the conversations you have on set with scripty, we call them scripty. And there were a lot of script supervisors came through because it's a really difficult job on Gilmore Girls because there was a lot of dialogue, a lot to take care of, and people burn out pretty quickly. And said, get me the hell off the show. Yeah. It's too much work. No, I mean, they left for other reasons too. You know, they come up to you and say, yeah, that didn't match. You got to turn a little sooner on that line and then put the muffin in. And
I could never do that job because my brain doesn't work like that it's where tough. I would be able to know that.
It's exacting. It's just exacting. Yeah. So every time you see a scene that's flowing in the diner and it's working perfectly, we've shot the heck out of that because the editor demands it. When the editor has to put that scene together and the show together, they need as much footage as they can possibly have to look for the perfect moments and the perfect matchy stuff that matches. So the more they have, the more likely they are going to be to match everything from master to close up to close up. Yeah.
For you as an actor, did you as Luke typically do your best work the first shot, like the first
yes first time? First two takes, I'd nail it the first two takes and get worse as we went along. And
okay, so we do have to take a break, but as you were saying all of these things and I'm learning about acting, what it made me realize is Edward Herrmann is a genius because he scared me in that scene. Like, he was so scary. And he literally is a genius because he played it like perfect.
Very, very gifted actor, very studied actor, in total command of his instrument. And,
yep.
You know, just, yeah.
I would like to discuss that.
Okay.
When we come back.
All right. Well, you're going to get your wish, young lady, because I'm here for you and I'm going to explain it all. All right. We're going to be back after these words. And when we come back, we got some splaining to do for the Sugarman on Ed Herrmann. Genius. And we'll be back after these words. All right, everybody. We're back. I'm Scott Patterson. I am all in podcasts, iHeartRadio, 111 Productions, and Amy has introduced us to the brilliance, not that we didn't already know, of Mr. Ed Herrmann.
I mean, what did you think watching that scene, since this is probably like the first time you've really seen it?
Well, I mean, look, you have to be, and there's a lot of ways to interpret a scene. There's a lot of ways to go at Dean, right? But he's such a courageous actor, such a gifted actor, that he really went at him. I mean, he wasn't messing around. He brought, you know, how many, you know, he brought a couple of decades of disappointment came up in him and directed it at Dean because he was really just a giant laser eviscerating that young boy, wanted to eliminate him. I mean, and talk about... And I, you know, this is how the privileged shame people. It's grades. It's, you know, connections. It's this. And boy, did he pulled out all the stops with that kid. Like A's,
right from
B's.
The start.
Yeah.
Right from when he didn't shake his hand. Right from when he came into the like sitting room or the library or whatever they call it.
He could tell. He could tell by the way he was dressed. He could tell by the little leather necklace that Dean was wearing. With the little stone on it or whatever was on it. What was on the necklace?
I thought it was a chain, but I definitely...
Well, maybe it was a chain.
Very prominent.
Maybe it was a chain.
Whoever was the stylist definitely...
Perfect.
Put that on him intentionally.
So that Richard... Because that's a meeting that Amy and Dan have with wardrobe saying, listen, what do we put on him to make sure that Richard sees it immediately and makes that judgment and knows exactly what he's dealing with?
The necklace was a total crucial statement.
Right.
Because Logan, would have worn a suit.
Yes.
I don't know what Jess would have worn. Right. That would have been maybe even a more of a train wreck than Dean. But Logan would have worn a suit.
Yeah.
And right. In my mind, during that scene, I started to think about Logan and how much Richard loved Logan.
But the beauty of that scene, when Emily first opened the door, we didn't know who Rory was bringing. We didn't even know if she could bring somebody. That was all information we got after the fact. And there's Dean in it with a button open on his inappropriate wardrobe, right, for that occasion, like the Friday night dinner. And he's coming casual, like he's going to a rock concert with his leather or his steel chain.
It was so intentional, the outfit.
Yes, it was beautiful.
And he was dressed up, right. But he was just dressed all wrong for the
right. Gilmore. Because as soon as she opened the door and I saw Dean, I said, uh-oh. And that's what's supposed to happen. You're like, oh no, he's not dressed right. This is going to be bad.
No, totally. The neck, that's so interesting. Yeah, yeah. Riley, Danielle, did you guys notice the necklace immediately too?
I thought it was puka shells. And I was like, wow, that's really throwing it back.
I didn't notice the necklace so much as much as the shirt.
The shirt.
I was like, oh,
yes.
The shirt doesn't match.
It's not tucked in and it's wrong and it's open.
It was a bit Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, but he's so cute, guys. I love Dean. Yeah. I love him so much.
He is as sweet as can be, but it was all wrong for the Gilmores. Even Emily was like, and then you could, you know, through her eyeballs, Lorelai used eye communication to Emily, like, knock it off.
Right. That was funny. Like, it was so nice of you, Mom, to invite him. Right, Mom? That's really good.
And then they really win Emily over with the whole want a drink, bit, which made it that much funnier when Dean leans over to Lorelai and says, should we try the beer thing? I mean, I was uncomfortable.
Yeah. You're supposed to be. You're supposed to be as an audience. They're just setting you up for the big overhead smash of Richard Gilmore.
Did it make you dislike Richard?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I get it. It was over the top, but I get it. I mean, I get where he's coming from.
Right. He had total PTSD and was basically like,
not again.
I will not repeat this.
I'm not repeat. Exactly. And the beauty.
Yeah,
you go ahead. No, go ahead.
The beauty is that Lorelai understood.
Right.
And I actually thought, wow, okay. And that Emily was not having it. It's so complex. There's so much to break down. Okay, keep going because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah. No, just to sum up that scene, hysterically funny. Poignant, very dramatic, very heartfelt, and I mean the stakes were really high for Richard and Emily. I mean, really, really high. I mean, they just know Dean is a nice kid. Lorelai and Rory is just a nice kid. They're back together, celebrating, and what a perfect setup! You know, he comes back into the fold. Everything is jolly. Rory's happy as a clam. Lorelai's getting married, you know, this kind of a thing. We got to talk about that, don't we?
Each of the people in that scene, because I felt Rory's pain, like, oh God, this is so embarrassing for her. This is so disappointing for her. And she's, you know, getting upset. And like, this is her grandpa that she really has grown to idolize.
But you know what? There's nothing like maturity and age to be able to spot bad news when it shows up. He knew right away. He could smell it. He knew that kid was trouble, even though that kid wasn't being trouble. Mm-hmm. He's just a sweet, sensitive kid. He's from out of town. He's not a townie, that kind of thing. But Richard could smell it on him. And he knew that kid didn't have the grades to hang with her. And he didn't care. He understood life from a different point of view. Yes, in the here and now, everybody's jolly and happy and Rory's in love and he's in love. But, you know, older people think about future and he's protecting his granddaughter.
So do you think Richard would love Tristan, even though Tristan's a jerk?
Yes, he would. Do you know why?
Yeah.
because in the crucial moments when he's 24, 25 at the law firm at the insurance agency, he'd be a killer.
Yeah.
Those people in business are tough. They're really tough. And Tristan has that.
You know, what's interesting is like, these people do not hold back their rudeness. Mm-mm. Because that's the other thing. Like, he was so blatant about it. And it flashes me back to when Christopher's parents and Richard and Emily were like going at it. Like, these people don't, it's like, I don't know what the word is, but it's so like, wait, aren't you supposed to talk after?
Listen, when you're young and you're a student and you're in a top-notch private school and then you're in the Ivy League, you are getting, you know, your ears boxed by professors. You are getting almost abused by people to work harder, be better, be smarter. You're not being told how wonderful you are. The old school way was, you're not hacking it, you're stupid, work harder, let's go.
Yeah, it's like the headmaster at Chilton.
Yes. They give no quarter. And that world, right. I mean, that is a super, that type of level of academics is super competitive, and it is cutthroat. And you can't make any excuses, and you can't screw up, and you can't get a B. It just isn't possible. So the pressure is enormous, and people wonder why, you know, people in the Ivy League sometimes and commit suicide, or it's because the pressure is enormous to excel. So I get where they're coming from. I get where he's coming from.
So what do you think of the aftermath, in that when Lorelai sits Rory down and says, okay, like, let's just talk about it for a minute. Like, your grandpa loves you more than life itself, and he's not doing this to you. This is all about me. I thought, wow.
Yeah, it makes her character all that much, all the more impressive, because mm-hmm. she's aware of what a disappointment she is to that family and all the repercussions and all of the angst mm-hmm. that caused. And she's mature enough to not let it affect her daughter. She's protecting her daughter from all of that and trying to make her realize, look, this is their long game. This is how they view it. You got to understand that. And I think in a way, Lorelai was comforted by that. I didn't see Lorelai objecting to at all to what Richard was doing, because I think Lorelai probably felt an inkling that he was doing the right thing to Dean, mm-hmm. right? Like, why couldn't my dad have been like that with me?
Right. Because otherwise Lorelai would have stormed out of there.
Mm-hmm.
She sat there.
So she maybe agreed a little bit. Like, you know, this guy isn't wrong.
It reminded me too of when in Piacella, I think it was in Piacella. Mm-hmm.
Piacella.
When Lorelai says to Rory, I have a problem with letting people in or relationships. I don't want you to have it because right. I have it. Right. Like, I'm realizing Lorelai has very clear self-awareness and almost like gets it, which is cool.
She's extremely intelligent. She's yeah. extremely intelligent. And I mean, it was just a wonderful parenting moment. Again, yet another wonderful parenting moment for Lorelai.
Yeah, Lorelai stayed very calm. Mm-hmm. Which I think helped the situation. She was very funny when she says to Emily, like, wait, wasn't that supposed to be us?
Yeah.
You know,
it was great.
She says to Dean, welcome to being a Gilmore girl, kind of like diffusing it a bit.
Yeah.
By saying like, this is how it goes. And like, it's all going to be all good.
Toughen up, buttercup. This is what it's like.
And then what did you think of Emily when she goes into Richard's office and says, you will call?
I think it was a beautiful moment, beautifully acted. And I think the thing that really stayed with me was after she closed the door and she was by herself in the hallway, experiencing that deep pain. She is such a wonderful actress. She can communicate that pain in a look. And she's all feeling it. But, oh, I felt so bad for her. I felt her pain.
Me too, because you realize mm-hmm. Emily doesn't like that she doesn't have a good relationship with Lorelai.
Right.
She's not like one of those moms like, oh, that's just how it is. Like, it pains her.
Yeah, as sarcastic as she is with her own daughter, there's still hope. I think there's still hope that there can be some normalcy and a little bit of detente, You know, very poignant scene with Emily and Richard. And you will do this and you will apologize. And this is why. And she was 100% right.
Yeah, because Richard crossed the line. Richard, mm-hmm. even though we get it, he went too far. And it's like, you just can't do that to a kid. Some kid that's over at your house for dinner.
I don't know. It's hard for me to criticize Richard for that. It's hard. I've
come
seen,
on. You think you're hard. Gonna? Like, when your kid's a teen, yeah. and he has a girl over, you're never gonna do that.
Oh, I'll blow her out of the water if she's not the right girl.
It's one thing to say it to, like, your child, but then to say it at dinner in front of an audience with your child's significant other there, that's where it kills.
Right, this sweet little boy. And I thought Dean Jared played that so well too, because he stayed calm. He tried to be polite. He tried to answer the questions. And the sad part is, you know, that he's questioning, like, yeah, I'm not good enough for her.
I think he's beginning to realize it. But I think the most interesting part of this is what wasn't said, and Lorelai did not say a thing. Because really, it was like, Dad, knock it off. Because it's so easy for her to talk that way to Emily.
Totally.
But her own father, Dad, knock it off. Don't talk to him that way. Okay, we're leaving. That's enough, Dad. Knock it off. So that was supposed to
right,
be.
Right.
She didn't say a thing. She agrees.
No, Rory
she agrees.
Had to do it.
Rory had to do it. Mm. Yeah, she agrees. Lorelai agrees.
Yeah, because in the conversation she had with Rory, you know, she says, he's worried you'll repeat my mistakes. And she says, I'm not going to get pregnant. So there, maybe you're right. And that there was some element of, like, Lorelai saying to herself, well, I'm happy I didn't have to do it.
Well, she said it was. Yeah, right. And she's like, she said, it's 100. How does that happen, Mom? Well, it's 100 years of inbreeding will get you right there. Their standards are very high, Dean, you know, this kind of thing. And they're not kidding. They are.
Oh, yeah.
They're impossibly high. I mean, yeah, if you're not of, you know, royal blood, forget it. Forget it. They're not going to let anybody else in. No way.
No That's way. Why they love Logan. Nah. That's why I love Logan.
Stop it. Logan. Stop it right now. Stop it.
I'm counting down the days.
Stop it.
I just love it.
Knock it off.
Wait, did anybody else feel disappointed that we didn't get to see the homemade Twinkies?
A little, but we did. Yeah, a little. I'm actually, I was left hungry. I was salivating. Again, another evidence of brilliance of the show. It left you salivating for Twinkies after all that drama. Isn't that hysterical?
And then somehow, of course, Lorelai had 42 Twinkies in the cupboard, just ripping the plastic off, making like a Twinkie tower.
How many are they going to eat? Jesus. How do they stay so thin? It's amazing. I mean, my God. Yeah, there were at least 10. There were 12.
And the beefaroni, they were, because it was so cute that, like, they made what Rory wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Beefaroni. Mm-hmm. Homemade beefaroni.
Let's get into Max. And let's get into Max and Lorelai. Okay. Should we take a break and come back?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Listen, we're going to take a little break. We got to towel off. We're getting sweaty here. We got to take a breather, get some Gatorade going. We'll be back after we towel off. All right, kids. Bye. All right, we're back. Scott Patterson, I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio, 111 Productions. We are going to talk about, in episode 1, season 2, Sadie, Max and Lorelai engagement. Big news flash. Big deal. Wow.
Thoughts?
I was fine with it.
What did you think of that scene when they're out there on the bench and he gives the ring and the...
Thought it was a very nice scene.
Yeah.
They were both very cute, adorable, and very likable, and mm-hmm. I'm glad that they're happy.
Sure, mm-hmm. you are. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that the scene where he handed the ring wasn't cheesy. It was kind of cool.
All right. Listen, I didn't make my play. I have no right to feel any other way. I did not make my move. If I, you know, look, I'm supposed to be some old school guy. That character, Luke, is supposed to be this old school guy. He didn't make a move. He allowed people to interrupt him. You know, he wasn't aggressive enough. He didn't get the girl. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I like Max. I like Max. I, you know what it is? I guess it doesn't feel like Lorelai loves Max, that she can't live without Max, that Max is her soulmate. she likes Max fine. She seems perfectly happy.
I agree. I think they're a lot alike. There's a lot of similarities there, but it doesn't feel like it's end all be all deep passion.
And like, how can she marry a guy that the town doesn't even know?
Right.
Like Miss Patty being like, is he a nice man? He's a very nice man. It's like, what planet are we on? Like, how could she marry someone that they don't all know?
Right. She doesn't know either though. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like Luke was in my head that entire episode after, where are you going to live? Are you going to have kids? And she couldn't answer those questions. So like they love each other and they're so cute. But the whole time I was like, Luke's right. Like they don't actually match up, you know?
They don't know each other.
It really shows that Luke has given this a great deal of thought in his downtime alone in his room. Above the diner. And, you know, he was probably tossing and turning, couldn't sleep. And why am I not more bothered by this? I mean, I'm bothered by this and it's inevitable. And why don't you make a move? But wait a minute. What about these very logical questions, these very practical questions that are yet to be answered, right? This isn't going to work out because A, B, and C figured it out. And then he went to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's like, this is not happening.
No, it's not happening. And so he had that calm demeanor of a person who knows that it ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. We should reestablish that when we created this show, and everyone makes fun of us for this, but we wanted one person who had never seen it. So that's why we have Danielle, because I have seen it a million times and Scott was in it. So he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, but I don't really remember what happens. I do not remember any of these. Not really.
All right.
I mean, I'm closer to Danielle than anything because I have no clue. I watch these episodes and I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I don't remember this.
You know you're going to marry her.
Yeah, well, I know that. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so Danielle, you have not seen anything ahead of this. So I want to know, what do you predict for Lorelai and Max? What do you think is going to happen?
I can't get this, like, I can't say like, oh, he's going to cheat on her. Like, I don't think that's going to happen, but I do know that they're not going to end up together. Like, that's pretty obvious right now. And same with Dean and Rory too. I'm like, oh, I love Dean, but it's not going to work out.
Just, in a show like this, the unpredictable nature of the show, when things are going really well, that's a warning sign that things are about to go really badly. So the better they get, the more la 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 music and daisies around and everybody's in love and happy. It's not going to end well.
Do you think Max and Lorelai will get married?
You're asking me?
No.
Well, I want to ask you, Scott, but I think that you know.
I don't. I actually don't know. I don't know if they do or not. What do you think, Daniel?
I don't think they'll actually get married. I think she'll be like runaway bride. Is that what happens? Is that what happens?
We're not going to tell you.
No, don't say. I don't know. I have no idea.
But I do think it's interesting to see what y'all predict, because I know what it's going to happen.
Yeah, I can't even chime in on this. I don't know the details. I just know it's not going to happen. But I don't know if it happens and then it goes bad or it just never gets to the altar. I have no idea. So I'm dying to watch the next couple. I want to binge this show and I can't. It's so frustrating. I didn't know how frustrating this podcast would be. I can only watch one episode a week.
So lucky.
It sucks.
Podcast, so you can figure out what happens.
I want to watch like 10 episodes, man. I, at the same time and eat popcorn. It's too good.
I love it.
That's frustrating.
Yeah, everyone makes fun of it that we have Danielle who's never seen it, but I still stand strong on the fact that it was good to have one person.
Yeah.
That's watching it for the first time.
Look, there's going to be a percentage of people that are going to have a problem with anything we do. Don't worry about it.
To the one person listening that hasn't seen it, I am here for you. To that one person.
We need Danielle. We need that support, that relatability, right?
Speaking of things people love.
Yeah.
Riley. It's time for Riley.
I will follow that introduction because my mom loves me and a few other people. So it's okay. I know people love me. I love myself sometimes.
We love you. because you are a superstar. You are a superstar.
Oh my God, before we do this, we forgot to announce the next person that's doing Friendsgiving with you, Scott.
Oh, can I say?
Yeah, obviously.
I want to say.
Yes, it's your show.
It's going to be Grantley Phillips, ladies and gentlemen. Grantley Phillips.
The incredibly
talented singer-songwriter, Grantley Phillips, a town troubadour. And here's an extra little added bonus for everybody. He is going to perform some music. And he's genius. Genius.
How do I get tickets?
Amy, you don't know how to get tickets. You go to loopedlive.com. LOOPEDLIVE.com, loopedlive.com. And you can get your tickets there. You get a $15 general admission. You get a $25 VIP, which means you get to do Q&A with me and Grant and Emily Carota. And we have other guests that we haven't mentioned yet, but we will.
Is the money going to a good cause?
Oh, my goodness. My two that are near and dear to my heart, St. Jude's Children's Hospital and Baby to Baby. So we're going to help people. So loopedlive.com. I am all in. Friendsgiving, November 11th, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Loopedlive.com. Get your tickets.
I'm Riley, and this is your pop culture. So first we have Lorelai and Rory talking about the potential wedding. And while they're walking around Stars Hollow, Lorelai says, you know how on All in the Family with Edith and would be yapping and about something and Archie would pretend to make a noose and hang himself and shoot himself in the head? Well, All in the Family is an American sitcom television series on CBS that ran for 9 seasons from 1971 to 1979. The show was honored on a 33-cent stamp by the USPS, and Sally Struthers, who plays Babette, co-starred in All in the Family.
Do you guys know this show? Amy, do you know All in the Family? Danielle, do you know All in the Family?
Of course. So they're too young. I do.
Let's hear your Edith imitation. Go ahead. Do Edith.
I don't do impressions.
Come on, do an impression. Come on, you're on the spot. I'm putting you on the spot. You got to do an impression. Come on, do it. You know.
Okay. Archie!
That's good. You did good, Archie. Archie, your dinner's ready. There you go. Come on, kid. You can do it.
Huh? Don't you think it's funny that they do a pop culture reference to All in the Family on a show that Sally Struthers is on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just, you know, the greatest sitcom in the history of television, probably.
Can you do a Edith impression?
Go ahead.
I can do based off your impression, maybe.
Go ahead.
Archie.
Is that it?
It wasn't bad.
What did you say of Archie?
That sounded like a 150-year-old woman.
I would have liked to hear Riley sing the All in the Family theme song a little bit.
Oh, that, yeah. It was a thing in the 70s. It was a huge, Norman Lear, huge sitcom. For its time, it was groundbreaking television.
It really was.
Because it got very, very political, and they were into big issues every single episode.
And my favorite, Rob Reiner.
Yeah, and Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner was Mike Stivic.
Yeah, so Sally Struthers played the daughter, and then she married Rob Reiner. I mean, the talent on that show was like,
yeah, it's off the charts.
And then it spun off like a million television shows.
Right.
Like The Jeffersons and all these other shows came because of All in the Family.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a fantastic show. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Riley.
Riley.
That was one of the days.
Yeah, wow.
Good.
That's pretty. You nailed it.
Not
good.
Too bad.
Not bad at all. That's,
So Lorelai talks to Suki in the kitchen of the Independence Inn after Lorelai says she's engaged, and Suki says, who's catering? And Lorelai says, Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay is an American celebrity chef, restaurateur, and reality television personality. Bobby Flay recently exited the Food Network after 27 years, and his cat Nacho Flay is famous on Instagram with 240,000 followers, and he learned to cook at a young age while using an easy bake oven.
Yep, Bobby Flay wanted 100 mil.
Just a couple pennies.
He wanted 100 mil because the other guy got 80 or something. Who's the other guy? Guy Fieri?
Yeah.
Got 80. He wanted 100 mil.
I wonder where he'll go.
Well, he'll go somewhere and get the money.
I guess.
Yeah, aren't there a couple?
The cooking channel?
Listen, I'm all for talent getting as much as they can get. You know, It's good for them. Good for them.
Dean and Rory talk about breaking up is not for them. Rory says, oh, sure. Cher, Greg Allman. Bet they give it a big thumbs up. Cher is an American singer, actress, and television personality who's often referred to as the goddess of pop. Greg Allman was the late legendary rocker of Allman Brothers fame. And he and Cher were married for 4 days after she finalized her divorce from Sonny, but she filed for divorce from him 9 days after, later due to his drug problems. Cher and Greg have one child together, Elijah Blue Allman.
How did it, but I mean, wasn't she aware of his drug problems before that? And then all, what do you think? He just was like sober and hiding it until they got married. And then all of a sudden he just like started using again. Oh, I have to divorce you now. What's going on there? I have many questions about that relationship. I'm a huge fan of both of them, but especially Greg Allman.
I love Cher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love me some Cher.
Yeah, you got to love Cher. But yeah,
can you do a Cher impression, Riley?
Yeah, go. Do you believe in love after nice, life? Nice. It's not
that
bad.
Good.
But it's comedic, too. It's like she kind of nails it, but there's like this comedic twist to it. Do it again. That's that voice, that throaty thing you do is really funny. You're just your superstar status is just you're sealing it. Go ahead.
Do you believe in love after love?
It got better when I closed my eyes. Yeah. My eyes that time, it was a lot better.
Oh God, that was
me
good.
Too, since I'm not looking myself in the Zoom.
Oh
I'm
my
to
goodness.
Do that.
We're getting so off track. But did okay, you ever watch the Will and Grace episode where Sean Hayes
yes.
did the Cher impression?
I just thought, yeah, and the voice went down. Ooh, it would go down, right? The voice would go down.
So you're not Cher.
All right. Oh, that was hysterical.
That was literally the best. Yeah.
I did that. I did an episode of that show. He was a lovely
oh
guy.
Oh my God, you did?
I did. I was.
Who were you?
It was the episode called Das Boob.
Was this before Gilmore or after?
Oh no, before. Yeah, yeah.
No way.
Yeah, I'd done a Seinfeld, and then I did a Will and Grace, and I was an artist and an ex boyfriend or somebody that she had a crush on or
of
something
braces?
Like that. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so she thought, oh, my character liked busty women. She remembers that about me from it was either college or whatever it was. And here I am, the successful artist, and it's my show. I think it was something like that. And so she got a fake. She got a water bra to enhance herself, and it popped.
No.
And it started spraying water all over the paintings and stuff. Yeah. So
one Saturday, I'm gonna have to watch Saw 5. I love Saw movies.
You do?
Yes, I'm obsessed with the Saw movies. They're the scariest movies I've ever seen in my whole life. Saw 1 is hands down the scariest movie I've ever seen in my life. I'll watch The Seinfeld.
What about The Exorcist? You haven't seen The Exorcist?
Yeah, I have. Saw was scarier.
You thought Saw was scarier than The Exorcist?
Because The Exorcist seemed more like it's not going to happen, whereas Saw was like, this is totally going to happen. This could totally happen. This seems so real. And then is the event? I'll have to find the event again.
That's not scary.
I did watch it.
It's not scary.
No, I know. The event was good. I'm just trying to have a Scott Patterson Saturday.
All right. Okay. Spend your time as you will. Okay.
That's how she wallows.
That's how you wallow. Why are you wallowing? You're wallowing?
Oh, it could be when I'm wallowing. Hopefully I'm not wallowing though.
I've done enough
wallowing in my life.
What?
No, we're just talking about because remember when Rory needed to wallow?
Yeah, but why are you wallowing?
I'm not, right? I think Riley was just saying, like, if I needed to wallow, that's my playlist, as opposed to The Notebook.
All right.
You know.
But anyway, so Sean Hayes was just spectacular on that set. They were great. That's a great cast of people right there. That was a really fun show to work on.
Okay, you know. Riley.
Go ahead, Riley. Sorry, we're getting off the track here.
No, I like the track here.
All right.
Edit.
Okay.
Lorelai talks with Rory in the kitchen about the Art Deco ring. Lorelai says, supposedly ripped off of Zelda Fitzgerald's Cold Dead Hand. Zelda Fitzgerald was an American socialite, novelist, and painter. The Eagles wrote their song Witchy Woman after being inspired by Zelda's biography. Zelda's husband was F. Scott Fitzgerald, who wrote the Great Gatsby.
The greatest writer of prose that ever lived, in my opinion.
The Leo DiCaprio version of The Great Gatsby is not good. I weirdly watched it the other day. The Tobey Maguire Leo, the Robert Redford, thumbs up.
Yep.
Dean says he's not that great at math when he's at Friday night dinner. Lorelai says, yeah, except who is really, except for mathematicians or blackjack dealers, or I guess Stephen Hawking doesn't suck. Stephen Hawking was a physicist and author. He was diagnosed with an early onset, slow progressing form of the motor disease that paralyzed him for over decades. The doctor told him that he would die at a young age, but he lived for 55 more years than what the doctors expected. And he was known to be a wild wheelchair driver. And there is rumor that he once ran over Prince Charles' toes.
Wow.
Rory and Lane are hanging out at Lane's house, and Lane keeps talking about heading over to Korea with a one-way ticket. Lane says it's going to just be like Sally Field movie where their husband took them to Iran and wouldn't let them back in, except I won't have to keep my head covered. So the movie they were referring to was Not Without My Daughter, a 1991 American drama film based on the book series, or the book with the same name. Sally Field is an American actress and director. She portrayed the role of Betty in this film. She was infamous for her Oscar-winning speech, where she said, "You like me, you really like me." Sally also starred as Sister Bertrau in The Flying Nun.
Uh-huh.
She was The Flying Nun.
She was Norma Rae, too.
Oh, yeah.
She was Norma Rae. She was badass Norma Rae. Didn't she win an Oscar for that?
She also was the mom in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Lorelai and Suki talk in the kitchen at the Independence Inn, and Suki says, "Lorelai will be a Sadie." The reference is from Funny Girl. Lorelai says, "Funny Girl," and they go back and forth. Funny Girl is a 1968 American musical comedy drama. Barbara Streisand and Omar Sharif had an affair that lasted for the duration of the production. Barbara vetoed Frank Sinatra being cast for the film because he didn't like him. She didn't like him personally.
Really? That is an interesting factoid. Huh, I did not know that. Because Frank Sinatra was very aggressive about getting roles that he wanted. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, yeah, yeah. His singing career was over, and he was trying to make a comeback in Hollywood, and it worked. And I think he was. Mm-hmm. Then he got cast in From Here to Eternity and started making a comeback, and then the singing came back after that. But he was broke for a while. I mean, he was just like,
whoa,
down and out.
Really?
Yeah, Sinatra, yeah, he was a huge star.
Old Blue Eyes.
He was down and out in Hollywood, man, and he aggressively went after the role in From Here to Eternity. I don't know.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's actually
a hint before my time.
Yeah, yeah, but mine too, but I mean, I read sometimes. Anyway, I don't wallow and have 10 houses and... You know, I read sometimes. So anyway, what were you saying? That's an interesting factoid. I had no idea. God, Omar Sharif was so great in that role.
See, this segment doesn't suck, Riley. It doesn't suck.
No, it doesn't.
You like me. You really like me.
There you go, Sally. That's it. Give it to him.
Bring it home, Riley.
Yeah.
They
threw down the gauntlet. Now you're showing them what a superstar can do. This is why you got the job. We saw it in you.
We're bringing it home with a banger. Max is talking to Rory on the
banger. What?
What the kids say.
That's what the kids say. Bringing it home with a banger. Okay.
Max is talking to Rory on the phone, and Lorelai starts barking when she hears the ring that she likes. And Max says, "Put Cujo on the phone, please."
That was a good scene.
Cujo is a 1983 American horror film based on Stephen King's 1981 novel. The dogs in the 1983 film would have their tails tied down because the dogs would be enjoying themselves so much that they would wag their tails. To make the dogs attack the car, animal trainers put dogs' favorite toys in the car so the dogs would try to get them, and the foam around Cujo's mouth was made from a concoction of egg whites and sugar.
Mm. Nice.
And that's your pop culture.
Nice research on you.
Really
get
well
on
done.
You.
Yeah, well nice. Done.
Very well done.
So, my favorite lines. I have two.
Oh, gosh.
I have like 20 from this episode.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Of course, the old, "Will you get me a muffin when you're up there?"
Uh-huh.
Which I already said.
Uh-huh.
I freaking loved when you said, "I'm all prepared to jump up and down if necessary." That's the best. That entire scene was like.
It's not the line so much, it's the delivery of the line. Yes.
And, you know, I still like when this is not a favorite line per se, but I thought it was an important scene when Miss Patty says, "Have you told Luke? Be gentle." Because it was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Danielle, you're up.
Okay. I have four, but I'm going to just say two. So,
I'll say
the
four.
First one.
Say four.
The first
Say
one.
Four.
Is,
why not?
Okay, you're gonna get all four. Okay,
it's just so 2 hours long. Too long already.
Yeah, let's go.
So the first one is from Emily when she goes, "Antonia, please bring out the Twinkies," because a servant literally brought out Twinkies. Uh-huh. It's just so good. The second one is from Dean when he goes, "Beer's bad."
Beer's bad.
Beer's bad.
Beer's bad.
So good.
Beer
okay.
Bad.
third one is from Richard. His head is shaped like a football. If he fell asleep in the park, someone would try to punt him. So good. And then my last one is when Lorelai was looking at the wedding magazines, that I was trying to get the guy's name, the guy that was
Bootsy.
Working.
Bootsy. Okay. Bootsy.
Bootsy. That's what I thought I heard, but didn't know. So Bootsy, he goes, "Are you Leo?" And Lorelai goes, "No." And then he goes, "Thank God, those guys are getting screwed this week."
Riley.
My line is from Lorelai, and she's freaking out when they're standing outside of Emily and Richards, and she presses the doorbell. She goes, "Oh, look, doorbell, ding dong, pretty sound."
Where was this?
Outside of Emily and Richards, you know, she's freaking out before going into dinner.
Right.
And Rory's trying to talk to her, and she's just all over the place, and she says, "Oh, look, doorbell, ding dong, pretty sound."
That was in this episode?
I didn't catch that. You sure that was this episode?
She was deflecting because Rory was like asking her all the questions. I got you, Riley.
She was disturbed by what Luke's reaction.
Seriously, I did not even catch that.
Okay, so my favorite line is Rory when she just said, "I'll have a beer." I thought it was perfect setup for that joke. "I'll have a beer." Yeah, that was good.
I know, it's still good when Dean said, "Should we do the beer thing again?"
You know, it's like they do jokes so well. I mean, it's like you know, sometimes that show just becomes a stand-up routine. And I so love that about it. I so love it because you get that good setup and then there's the joke. Boom. That's good. It's good joke telling. You know, we didn't even mention Melissa McCarthy in this episode and how great she was.
When she burned
her hand. Oh, several times. I mean, she burned her hand. She put her hand on the burner. She cut herself. They wrapped her. When she's talking to Emily, she did it again.
Yeah, she burns
her. Oh, that was classic. And then she just threw the phone in the sink. It was great. Melissa McCarthy took us on an emotional journey getting the good news from Lorelai that she's getting
married. Also makes you realize how amazing Lauren Graham is. Mm-hmm. That Melissa McCarthy, you forget because Lauren Graham is so amazing.
No, I don't know. Listen, I agree with you, but I don't agree with you. I didn't forget Suki. I'm the one that just brought her up. You guys forgot her.
I did. I totally forgot because I'm obsessed with Lorelai. Also, what did you think of Lorelai with the glasses in this episode?
Yeah, she looks good in glasses. But the reason, you know, it's like Keiko and Melissa didn't have major story arcs in this episode, which is why, you know, we spent all the time on the major story arcs. But, you know, the performances, wow. Melissa just hitting it out of the park. Just wonderful. And even Michelle. Even this little stuff, it's all such high quality. It's like if the major story arcs aren't good enough here's some more brilliance here, then you're going to forget about it. But, you know, it's like it's still great. There's a lot to love here. A lot to love here. So great episode.
Agreed.
So what else? What else do we have to cover here?
That's it. It's see you next week.
Done. The next episode, season two, episode two, Hammers and Veils. And we'll be back next time, y'all. We're going to have a special surprise guest. And, hey, guys. God, I'm going to be in Houston. If you want to come down and see me at the Bayou City Comic Con, November 19th through 21, Houston, go to, I guess, BayouCityComicCon.com and get tickets. And, nice. New York Comic Con was huge. It was so much fun. Oh, my God. You know, they have 3.3 million square feet there of convention space. God. And it was filled to the brim.
Yeah, it looked cool.
Yeah. And it was great being back in the old town, my old stomping grounds, man.
Yeah.
I hope that place comes back. It's starting to look like it's coming back a little bit.
I hear that too.
Yeah. I'm encouraged. So if you're planning to go to the Big Apple, you know, it's coming back to life a little bit. It's nice to see. Anyway, guys, thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening in. Y'all are the best fans on the planet. You know it. We know it. We love you. We always will. You know, thanks for tuning in. I'm Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast, iHeartRadio 111 Productions, and we will see you next time. Be safe, everybody. don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. All you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.